You are flying high with Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. I'm wondering when it's going to be 8 years. We'll ask Ben in a sec. You can follow his work at Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm very well, Michael. Thank you for asking. I do appreciate it. The anniversary, if you're wondering, is the end of May. That's the last day of May is the anniversary for the streak. But I'm doing well. Obviously, Friday, getting pumped for game day. Very, very exciting. Okay, firstly, what is the name of the owner of the Dallas Cowboys?
Jerry Jones.
False. His real name is Gerald.
Gerald?
So Natalie Weiner, who writes for Bleacher Report and is a fantastic writer, and you should follow her stuff, she quote tweeted this whole like Jerry Jones, Roger Goodell, you know, little spat, little lover's quarrel here. And she said his real name is Gerald. And I just thought it was a joke, so I commented on it. And she was like, no, his real name is actually Gerald. And so if you go to Wikipedia right now, if our producers go up to Wikipedia for you and show you, you search who owns the Dallas Cowboys. Right, it'll come up as Gerald Jones. His name is Gerald, J-E-R-R-A-L, Gerald.
That is wild. What?
Yeah, I know, mind-blowing. But I want to beat Gerald. I want to beat him very badly. This whole like NFL cease and desist, him trying to oust Goodell, like this is just absurd at this point. I want to lay the smackdown on him.
Yeah, I agree. And we're going to talk about how we're going to do that today. So we'll take a look at the offensive side of the ball versus defense, vice versa for both teams, so on and so forth, getting ready for this primetime matchup with the hated Dallas Cowboys. Let's jump right into it, man, because I am chomping at the bit wanting to talk about this game. All right, so first up, so Ben, you look at the pass defense for the Cowboys from a coverage standpoint. You got to think that the Cowboys will try to get safety Byron Jones on Zach Ertz. With PFF has that as a negative 5% advantage for Ertz. That's tilted in the favor of Jones. But we've done this dance before, and we've talked about it. And without outright saying that Ertz is matchup proof, he's won pretty much every matchup he's been presented, not only just by himself, but also through scheme. And while Jones is very good in coverage, he's not completely locking down other good tight ends in the league. The other safety, Jeff Heath, is still in the concussion protocol and is questionable as it stands right now. And that could open the door for more snaps from rookie Xavier Woods. Mm-hmm. Then you look at their linebackers. Sean Lee is out with a hamstring, and Lee has been by far their least leaky cover backer. I want your thoughts on this, Ben, but I would love to see the Eagles take a page out of the Falcons playbook and use alignment or motion to get Ertz lined up on Jalen Smith if he continues to take significant snaps, because in coverage, he has been targeted 25 times. He's given up 20 receptions for 228 yards, which is no bueno. And as you know, that's Spanish for not bueno.
So, not bueno.
So, Ben, how do you see Doug Peterson deploying Ertz against this Dallas defense, and what kind of success do you believe that they'll have?
Right, so if you're going to try to get a tight end lined up on a linebacker on a team that would rather move their safeties down, you've got to do a couple of things. First thing is you're going to have to run 3-by-1 sets. And obviously you're going to be running it out of 11 personnel because you need to keep a tight end in there. You know, you can do 12 and put Trey Burton on the other side if you want, but whatever. So you'll need to have Ertz on the strong side, two wide receivers out split wide from him, and then one receiver on the backside. Right? Now you'll set this up. Maybe they'll originally bring that safety down. If they're doing so, they're now playing single high, which means you've got man on the outside with those two boundary receivers, including the one who's one-on-one on the weak side, right? So it's like, you know, like I said, you could put Burton out there, but let's say it's Mac Collins, let's say it's Alshon Jeffrey, right? Sort of guys that you want in those sort of matchups. You need to hit that guy consistently, right? Which will prevent them from being from just playing single high, right? So if you want to get Ertz matched up on Jalen Smith, that's kind of the way that you'll have to approach things. Then if they do choose to rotate that safety all the way down into the slot, because they're trying to stay into base packages, I guess if you're running the ball well, which that wouldn't be very smart, but if they do that, you've got to violate that safety with your slot receiver, and you got to make them bring out a nickel corner, which is what they would do anyway. But those are the two ways that you can try to get a tight end lined up on a linebacker like Jalen Smith. I think Ertz is matchup proof in this sense. For he's incredibly athletic, he's incredibly difficult to cover. Is he purely matchup proof on athleticism alone? Maybe not.
Right.
But I think that gap gets covered by scheme.
Right.
Because there are games where we haven't necessarily, and you know how I feel about Peterson's offense and how he's deploying his players. There are games where we haven't necessarily highlighted Ertz just from a a target perspective, from a volume perspective, you know, against Carolina, only had two receptions. Both of them were in the red zone. Both were for touchdowns. We weren't really relying upon him to move the ball in between the 20s. You know what I mean? And then against San Francisco, which was a game that could have been, you know, a huge matchup for Ertz, with the fact that San Fran has a terrible defense, mm-hmm. only had four receptions for 34 yards. You know, he just wasn't really, like, we didn't really run the offense through him as much, right? If they feel like that's the best way to attack this Dallas defense, with given the issues at corner, I think that they'll likely try to attack the wide receivers a little bit more. Then perhaps they run things through Ertz. But I think if you want Ertz to be matchup proof, you can make him so by the combination of his scheme and his athletic ability.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And look, I don't care if PFF has it as a negative 5%. We're always able to find ways to get Ertz involved, especially in the red zone as well. It'll be interesting to see how we deploy our weapons here. Mac Hollins has seen an increase in snaps. I'm hoping that he starts to take over for Torrey Smith sooner than later. I understand, you know, there's been some garbage time and whatnot as well, so there's that part of it. I don't see an issue for these wide receivers getting open on this secondary, especially in the middle of the field where the Cowboys tend to really struggle.
Yeah, and my thing with the PFF matchup, which, like, their you know, corner to wide receiver stats, I really like those. I think those are good. You know, the relative worth of understanding that sort of a matchup can be debated, but I like those numbers. I get worried with PFF coverage numbers for players who play like Byron Jones plays, and it's not even a knock at PFF. It's, you know, personal experience. Sometimes it's so difficult to scout safeties. Sometimes it's so difficult to, like Jabril Peppers was one of the most difficult scouting jobs for a lot of people. And one of the main reasons why was because his role was so variable over so many plays, and he was constantly asked to do different things. A guy like Byron Jones is such a chess piece, playing a whole zone, right? Playing a middle of the field zone, it can be so difficult to riddle out what that player should have done. You don't know what he's been told, right? So I think, like, you know, we talk about PFF and with what to take a grain of salt and what to take at face value with PFF, because, you know, there's different mindsets, there's different philosophies on how accurate they are. That's one of the areas, like, when it comes to, like, a safety player like that, where I take pause personally. That's just me.
Yeah, and I would agree with you there. And I use the yards per coverage snap more for cornerbacks than I do for safeties for that very reason. Safeties have different responsibilities. And just because a safety maybe gives up a reception one in every 24 snaps, which looks great on paper, doesn't mean that, the, you know, they don't have them aligned 20 yards back and the offense is just moving the ball down the field by working it underneath. So that can mean a lot of different things. I would love to be able to see stat where it isolates, okay, this is his yards per covered snap when he's manned up with a tight end, something like that, or his most likely matchup along that line. But look, either way, that really valuable, and I want to plug them real quick. Remember to rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review. Ooh. Give us 5 stars. We had some scamp get into our reviews and give us 1 star, probably a Cowboy fan, noting, you know, knowing that it's rivalry week. So shout him down by giving us 5 stars. Put your Twitter handle in the review. Gives you a chance to win a free PFF Edge subscription worth $40. Also, make sure you check out yesterday's show, the reliving of 44-6. You already know what that means. Dallas Cowboys, Philadelphia Eagles back in 2008 through a narrative style. So go check that out.
The 1-star rating wrote a review about being a Dallas Cowboy fan.
Really? How interesting is that? A Locked On Eagles exclusive. Ben, what does it say?
So Brian1142 says, fabulous podcast for all Dallas Cowboy fans. 1 star out of 5. And he says, and I'll try to get the tone right here. If you enjoy listening to podcasts where the two co-hosts trot out as many excuses as possible for Dak Prescott's abysmal play, this is the podcast for you.
Wow.
Dak throws an interception. Des Bryant's fault. Dak fumbles the ball, Sean Lee's fault. Dak holds onto the ball too long and gets sacked 8 times, Jason Garrett's fault. A truly mind-numbing exercise in mental gymnastics, ... That's hashtag Locked On Eagles.
What is he even talking about? We never made those kind of excuses for Dak Prescott. I said that, you know, a quarterback's not going to be able to live in the type of environment that Dak operated under siege against the Falcons. He's been playing pretty well other than that, and... That's amazing. I even said that Dak got away with one when he threw a comeback route that nearly got picked. That's incredible. Hey, whatever. What was his username again?
Brian1142.
If you're listening because you love this show so much, I want you to at me on Twitter. Use the hashtag Locked On Eagles as well, and we can have a discussion about this. All right, bud?
Brian, you're totally entitled to your own opinion. If you want to talk to me on Twitter, you can. We'll have a good time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So let's get into the next topic here. enough of that. Let's talk about the pass rush for the Dallas Cowboys. DeMarcus Lawrence ranks fourth among qualifying edge defenders in Pro Football Focus's pass rush productivity metric, only behind Von Miller, Cameron Wake, and our son, Carl Lawson, who's playing amazing. Had a first-round grade on him. Whatever. Lawrence takes 97% of his snaps on Lane Johnson's side, which is how much Von Miller lined up on Lane's side when the Eagles played the Broncos. Do you see us treating Lawrence the same way in which we treated Von, which was essentially using Von against himself? And do you feel good about Big V locking up with Tyrone Crawford on the other side?
I'll go backwards. I feel good about Big V in the sense that there's no reason right now to not feel comfortable. And again, similar to the Ertz thing, the combination of the talent that Big V has and then the way that Peterson will be able to protect him with scheme. I will say that a lot of that tape from Denver wasn't great. A lot of the same issues still persist, though it was his first real start so far this year, and he definitely got better as the game went on. And he definitely settled in a little bit as the game progressed. And so, you know, like, I think about Brett Hundley, quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, backup. He came in, was absolute garbage in his first start. His second start was much better. Gave him a couple weeks, you know, to kind of get their sea legs under them. So I feel good about Big V. On the opposite side, yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence is not a better player than Von Miller, but he's playing better than any edge right now, right? He's hot. And I don't think there's been a game yet this year where he hasn't picked up a sack, you know? So I think it'll be a battle, you know? And we've seen Lane's biggest struggles come against really, really smart rushers, in my experience. I think that Lane's biggest issue is when rushers really know how to work a game on him and work a plan on the way that he sets up. And D-Law has shown that. Over the really successful opening nine games of the season that he's had, he's really been successful at setting up and stringing together moves. Just he's got a natural feel for it, and so I think he'll give Lane some trouble. I really do. The thing that separates how you handle Lawrence with how you handle Vaughn is that at each other spot on this defensive front, Dallas is worse than Denver was. And even a Denver team that's struggling as much as they are, at every Malik Collins doing pretty good. David Irving is a flash player, but like Derek Wolfe, Steven Paella, you know, Shaq Barrett, Shane Ray, all those guys are more talented at their respective positions than I think anybody you'll see, you know, coming at you from Dallas. And so in the event that Dexter Lawrence really starts to wreck some mayhem, you can attribute more attention to him more safely, in my opinion. This is the best offensive line in the NFL right now. And so, you know, even if you're getting a one-on-one matchup where Dexter Lawrence is playing well, I think you'll be able to neutralize him because you know your other guys can handle those other pieces.
That's a great point. Now, okay, so let's move it towards the offensive side of the ball for a second. According to PFF, again, I use their stuff all the time. So it's great that...
With good reason,
They are fantastic at telling you where people line up, so on and so forth. You can debate a lot of things, but the Eagles hold the biggest run-blocking advantage matchup of Week 11 at +38%. And on the flip side of that, and this kind of ties in together, the Cowboys own the second-worst pass-blocking advantage at -27%. So before we go on to predictions and everything like that, because that kind of ties into each other, really, with game script. First, the run game advantage. There are thoughts that the Cowboys may move Anthony Hitchens to fill in for the injured Sean Lee at weak side linebacker, which is where Dallas prefers to funnel the run. And Hitchens, along with Lee, I mean, they've been their most sure tacklers. I don't think as a unit, and I'm talking about front seven here, that this defensive unit is as disruptive against the run, nor do they tackle very well. And maybe the Atlanta game kind of skews things, or possibly, Ben, does it point to how important Lee was to their front seven? Are you in line with me when I say that the Eagles top 100 yards rushing for the ninth straight game?
Oh, most definitely. Speaking plainly, when Sean Lee is not in the game, they don't defend the run well. And you can move Anthony Hitchens around if you'd like to. Do the best thing you can there with what you got, but I don't foresee that, you know, being successful whatsoever. You know, Sean Lee missed weeks 4, 5, and 6 flat out for the Cowboys. And in those respective weeks, they gave up 168, 160 yards in two separate games to Los Angeles and to Green Bay. And then they had their bye week. Then he goes ahead and misses time leaving the Atlanta game, and they gave up 132 yards rushing. In the time that he hasn't made it this year, they've given up almost all of their largest totals rushing the football.
All right. Yeah.
And we've seen this a little bit with the Eagles. Without Jordan Hicks, they started to give up some rushing yards as well. You know, like this is what happens when you remove that central cog, that tackle machine from the middle of the defense. So yeah, I anticipate the Eagles keep that streak going with 100 rushing yards, especially because I anticipate them having enough of a lead there in the fourth quarter to just really run the clock out.
And how much of that is Dak's fault? Sorry. I'll I'll let it go. You know me, man. I'm a petty dude. I'm a real petty dude.
Yeah. Brian 1142 does not understand the can of worms he just opened.
Yeah, let me find that Twitter handle. All right, so taking a look at the Cowboys' pass blocking. So we covered this on the Wednesday show pretty thoroughly, and it's looking like the Cowboys, as it stands as we record here on Thursday night, might play Tyron Smith despite his groin, his back, probably an ankle. He might have an eye issue, maybe some pink eye. I don't know. There's a lot going wrong with him. I want to clarify something as well that is a common misconception. Brandon Graham lines up over the right tackle on 90% of the snaps. And that really doesn't vary for matchup. And with that said, Derek Barnett and Vinny Curry do line up over the left tackle, and they've combined for 49 pressures this year. Then you add in our interior pass rush. Ben, my question is then, how ugly does this game look if the Eagles jump out to an early lead and that run is bumping like we think it's going to be bumping for the Dallas Cowboys passing offense?
Real ugly. And I'm going to call my shot right here. This is the Derek Barnett woke game. I think it is. I think Vinny Curry is going to also cause Byron Bell some massive problems. Don't get me wrong. But I think this is the Derek Barnett woke game, and here's why. Barnett's style of rushing and just the way that we've seen him grow over his first 10 games, I think translates closer, number one, to what Adrian Claiborne did to Chaz Green, right? If he sees any Chaz Green whatsoever, number one. And number two, I think that Barnett particularly is licking his chops. Uh-huh. I think that the young rookie really, like, he's been getting hot the past couple weeks, and he knows what's coming down the mountain here. It's his first time in a Cowboy game, right? So, like, we always hear how, you know, like, we hear from rookies all the time, like, oh, I was told it was a crazy game, but, you know, then it was the first time I stepped out into the field. Like, he's about to get that juice of an NFC East division rivalry with the Cowboys that he's never had before.
And there's one thing that I noticed about Barnett's tape. Barnett is a gamer, and especially in big-time situations. And if he gets keyed in on the snap, Chaz Green is so slow out of his stance and can't get his hands on, I think Barnett eats him alive. I agree.
Yeah, no. So I'm calling my shot. This is the Barnett woke game. Barnett currently is attributed for, at some places, 2.5, and some places, 3 sacks. Yeah. I don't know exactly what he has, but we set the over-under at 4.5. I think he breaks it regardless. I think he's going to get 2.5 sacks today, on Sunday. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah, this could get ugly real quick. I would not be surprised if you see, not unlike the Atlanta game, Dallas come out and find some success offensively early, simply because their offense is going to look different than it has on tape. They're going to throw out different things. They're going to have pre-scripted plays that work for what they're trying to do. But once you get them, I think, into the second, the third quarter, and the Eagles can start adjusting coverages, I think it's going to cause them a lot of problems. Fun little stat about the Eagles defense here. I found this one today, and it's impressive. When it comes to stopping the opposing team on third and short being described as third and one to third and two, right? Those distances. The Eagles lead the league and only allowing 33.3% of those to be converted, which is pretty crazy if you think about it, right? But then you get into the next numbers. Second is the Lions at 47.1%. That's a 14% delta, right?
Yeah.
You go all the way down to 10th, it's 56.5. That's an 11% delta. So the Eagles are further away from 2 than 2 is from 10 as far as getting off the field on third and short, right? I think that once Dallas gets stuck behind, you know, I do not foresee this offense having the firepower to catch up. So only way Dallas stays in it is if they can keep it close for the majority of the game.
Yeah, and part of that stat, too, you look at Eagles versus non-quarterbacks running the ball, right? 3.09 average. You take wide receivers out of that equation, 2.92. And, you know, the Cowboys are going to have issues running against us, and teams have basically quit trying to run against us. There's only been one game where teams have run the ball over 20 times on us with non-quarterback ball carriers, and that was the Kansas City game. Teams have just stopped. All right. One of the key matchups I wanted to focus on the defensive side of the ball. One, there's Dez Bryant, and I'm assuming he's going to be going against Jalen Mills. Also on the inside, too, I wanted to take a look at Nigel Bradham versus Jason Witten, which I think Bradham owns all day.
You don't think Dez gets the Darby treatment on his trip back?
I don't think that we're going to see heavy usage from Darby as far as snap counts.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, then it's Darby versus Dez. And I'm excited about that.
They're saying he's full go, right? Like, he's been full go at practice. Ertz has been full go. Jalen Watkins has been full go. The only injury we had was Alshon Jeffrey limited at practice with the ankle.
Right. Yeah, which came out of nowhere as well. And I think this is the path to more Mac Hollins snaps, but that'll be interesting to see well. Yeah. So, okay. So if it's Dez versus Darby, Dez versus Mills, what are you looking from that matchup?
Oh, chirping for days. Yeah. Just straight, like, you know, all of the sass, just getting each other's face. Now, if it's Darby versus Dez, or excuse me, if it's Mills versus Dez, you know, you're going to see some wins and some losses. I think that Dez gets a bad rap. I think that folks are low on Dez as far as a top tier wide receiver. I still think he is, because the reality is when you have a guy who is as fast and large as Dez is at the same time, if he wants to run a 6-yard slant on you, he's going to run a 6-yard slant on you, right? Like, you can't do anything about it. Mm. The only way you can is if you know it's coming, because it's 3rd and 4 and he's alone on with a wide split on one side, right? Unless you sell out to defend it, you can't beat it. He's too big. He's got 2 strong hands. Mm. And that's a valuable tool. So I'm you know, I think that Dez gets a bad rep there sometimes. Also, you know, Dez has missed some time with Dak. If you look at Dak's stats across the last like 16 games with Dez, they're abnormal, right? Like, they, you know, when he's healthy and Dak's there, they play together really well. Fortunately for Philadelphia, in the event that Mills struggles with Dez, which I think will give up a few, get a few, as Mills usually does, it's not hard to rotate coverage over to Dez's side, because you're not afraid of Terrence Williams. You're not afraid of Jason Witten versus Nigel Bradham or versus Malcolm Jenkins. And you're not afraid of Cole Beasley. Mm-hmm. The offense has not spread the wealth around enough that you're not fearful of that.
Cole Beasley only has, what, 30 yards? Over 30 yards in one game this year?
Yeah. He's the 6th leading receiver on the team, which is absurd, yeah, because he's the 2nd most talented receiver on the team. But hey, that's Jason Garrett for you.
Yeah.
If we're looking at my number one matchup, it's going to be, I think, predominantly the work that's going to be done, Lane Johnson versus DeMarcus Lawrence. I think that the only way the Cowboys hold the Eagles below their 20-point, you know, streak is if they just cause all sorts of mayhem, think Carolina style, in the backfield for Philadelphia, which would be a ton of blitzes. So Kelsey becomes useful there. Same thing with Carson Wentz. So I think Carson's going to have a really good game. And I think I may have said this on an earlier pod, but they were leading in Dallas last year and they lost. Mm. And Carson strikes me as the sort of guy where he has not forgotten that for, you know, however many days it's been since that matchup, that's been on his mind. And, you know, he wants to win this Cowboy game. Like, you know, he's starting, yeah, to become a Philadelphia guy in that way. So I think we'll have a big game. So that's my big matchup to watch on that side. Flip it around, move it to the opposite side. Obviously, you want to go right back to the pass rush again. But I always love Fletcher Cox versus Zach Martin. Mm. That's always the matchup. To me, that is
super fun to
usually
watch.
Yeah, that's always a top 3 interior lineman versus a top interior defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. I would go so far as to say that this year, that's the top offensive guard versus the top defensive tackle playing in the NFL right now. And right, so this is premier, right? I'm so excited for that one.
Yeah, that'll be definitely fun to watch. And watch out if Cox gets on Jonathan Cooper. That should be interesting as well. Timmy Jernigan should have a day. So, okay, let's get it to our predictions here. I've got it 27-17 Philadelphia Eagles. I'd probably go higher, but, you know, I always give the divisional game bump for the losing team, just because I feel like those games are typically a little bit tighter. Like I said, this game could easily go off the rails and get out of hand for the Cowboys fairly early if they can't control some clock and get on the scoreboard early as well. I'm not worried about this game really at all. I don't see any facet in the game where they hold a distinct advantage over us, and then I turn it around and it looks like we pretty much can dominate them in a lot of different facets of the game. How do you have it?
So the Dallas Cowboys at home under Dak Prescott have never scored less than 19 points. All right. And both of those times was actually week 1 against the Giants. They scored 19 both times, which is kind of weird, but that's not really important. Eagles are still always scoring above 20 points. The Eagle defense always, when they hold teams below 24 points, they win. So again, if you're going to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, you've got to score 23 and keep them scoring 21. Mm. Do I think that Dallas can put up 23 at home? Absolutely. Do I think that they can hold the Eagles offense currently below 20? I don't think there's a chance. I have Philadelphia putting up 34. I have Dallas putting up 23. I do think, and we've said this a couple times before, that the gap is probably a little bit bigger going into the fourth quarter than that. And then maybe Dallas picks up a field goal, picks up a touchdown or whatever. But, you know, I give them 23 points. To me, feels like charity. I'm going with that home number, you know, keeping it above 19. That's assuming they figure out how to get that offense moving, yeah, consistently. And they've had a week to do it, and they've known Tyron Smith is out, mm, which apparently they maybe did not know whatever last week. So, I mean, I could foresee that number being a lot lower. But yeah, I think that this, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a similar first half to what you saw against Denver, where Philly jumps out to a quick lead fast.
Yeah, you were seeing a lot of betting action on the Eagles. The line started out at 2.5. It moved to 3 pretty quickly, and now it's up to 4. So get to mybookie.ag and get your bets.
What did I tell you when the line was set on Monday? I said it's currently at 3, and it's going to move up to at least 5, mm-hmm, by game day. It is currently at 4. When the official injury report comes out, and Teron Smith isn't playing, and Jeff Heath isn't playing, and Sean Lee isn't playing, I'm promising you it's going to go up to 5, and then I'm going to have something to brag about, even if DEFCON 4 Eagles lose.
I like it. All right. We will be back next Monday to talk with you. Sunday at midnight, we'll call it that, because we always like to drop our shows at the same time and get the most instant of reactions that we can give you based on our schedule. So we will be back to talk with you next week, hopefully to celebrate an Eagles win and going 9-1. You got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Cuckoo.